Hello everyone. Welcome to the month of December. It's a dark and cold Wednesday night here in Winnipeg. I want to thank everyone for their support in this website. In whatever way they have supported it, whether it is simply tuning in once in a while or sending in a question, sending in a comment of appreciation, perhaps sending in a contribution. And as always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for originally establishing this website and for posting this talk each month. November was a busy month for me. I don't know what it was like for you, but between work and certain family situations and right at the moment having a bit of a flu, it got a bit tiring at times. We had a number of questions and comments come in, so let's get down to it. The first person to have written in November sent this in. Hello. Thank you so much, Daryl, for your unique expression of the truth. I have not read any of your books, but I have heard your interviews and gone through the material on your website. I hope I can read your books soon. The question I have is that if everything is life playing out, the human being still seems to make decisions and have to do things. How does a human being decide that? How do I know what to do with myself? There is no choice in the matter according to you, but I heard that Ramana Maharshi said that we don't have free will, but we have to live as if we do. How do we do that? Any comments? I apologize if this is a dumb question or if you have talked about this before. So, first of all, there aren't any dumb questions. If you have a question that's bothering you in this regarding these issues, it's not at all dumb. And pretty much everything that I answer, I've answered in some way before. That seems to be simply part of this entire process regarding this, what we would call a non-dual perspective, and coming to consider all the different aspects of it. So the question here is, if everything is life simply playing out, the human being still seems to make decisions and have to do things. How does the human decide that? How do I know what to do with myself? Once again, this whole consideration of what would generally be called a non-dual perspective is simply an acknowledgement of what our experience actually is, what our daily experience actually is, what our common experience actually is as a human being. So if we really do acknowledge what our experience really is, then we may acknowledge that absolutely everything that we know of is changing. That becomes perhaps our most common experience of existence as so-called human beings, that everything we experience, apparently experience in existence, is changing. We don't make that changing occur, and we can't stop that changing. So it doesn't really matter whether it's a mood that's passing, or a thought that's passing, or the season that's passing, or our body that's growing older and will eventually appear to pass away, or the shifting of the earth and its climate, the movement of the earth around the sun, the movement of the Milky Way galaxy or the universe itself. Everything that we know of is changing. And with regard to our apparent being and our apparent behavior, the fact of the matter is that we don't create ourselves. None of us has the impression that we've created our body or our brain. We didn't create how it is that our body and our brain functions. We don't create our basic needs, our basic interests, our concerns, our abilities, or our lack of abilities. So it's a simple, again, a simple acknowledgement to acknowledge that everything we are is on automatic. It simply happens in the same way that the heart beats or the breath comes and goes. We don't have to in any way consciously make that happen. It simply happens. And throughout the centuries, the apparent centuries, people have discovered that if they sit down and do absolutely nothing, everything they are happens anyway. It simply happens. Breath comes and goes, the heart beats, the moods move and shift and alter. There are vibrations and pulsations. Sounds come and go. Thoughts come and go. There are little twinges here and there. The body shifts. One moment the attention is grabbed by a sound. The next it's grabbed by a storyline. The next it's grabbed by the breath. Everything is moving and shifting. There are certain urges that arise. And maybe at some point, one of those urges pushes on to become an action of some sort. All of it simply happens. That's our common experience. It's a very simple acknowledgement to acknowledge that fact. This person has written in asking, how do I know what to do with myself? Well, the fact of the matter is, you don't have to know what to do with yourself. You've never actually known what to do with yourself. All of it is on automatic. It simply happens. If we acknowledge the fact that everything that we know of is moving, shifting, and flowing, then it may become obvious that that is all there actually is, a compulsive flowing, a compelled expression. Our so-called basic needs simply present themselves. We have urges to eat. We have urges to go to the toilet. We have urges to move, to associate with others. We have these very fundamental urges that present themselves. We have basic interests that present themselves, whether you have an interest in science or art, or family, or business, whether you have an interest in approaching life in some slow, methodical way, or whether you have an urge to address life or move through life in some kind of quick and intuitive manner, all of that is a compulsive expression. So whether in this moment we compulsively move toward an apparent meal, or whether we compulsively move toward the next step in an apparent career path, all of this is a compelled expression. We don't have to know what to do with ourselves. We are simply a forceful dance, a forceful expression, a compelled expression. Those that are interested in making millions of dollars compulsively move in that way. Those that are interested in a consideration of what we might call wisdom teachings, they are compulsively moved in that way, compulsively expressed in that way. All of life, I mean, we could say in, if we were having to actually use words to say something about life, we could say that all of life is basically compulsion. That's all that actually exists. A compulsive force expressing itself, a formless dance, an endless procession, apparent procession. In any particular moment, each of us is being presented in a unique way. So in this moment, you have certain basic needs, you have certain basic interests, you have certain basic concerns. And you will apparently address those needs and those interests and concerns from the only abilities and lack of abilities that you have. So, you know, if we look at a so-called individual's journey through life, we could say that life presents an apparent external set of circumstances, and a so-called individual relates to that set of circumstances each in their own apparent way, since we each have our own basic needs and particular interests, and we each have a unique arrangement of those needs and interests. For each person, it's slightly different. There may be great similarity among the apparent people of the world, but actually, if we examine the situation very closely, it becomes obvious that each person is a unique arrangement of needs and interests and concerns in any particular moment. If life offers a set of circumstances in a particular moment that relate to a career in art, someone who's interested in business isn't really going to respond to that in any particular way. However, someone with a strong interest in a career in art will respond to that set of circumstances, and they will respond to that set of circumstances with whatever abilities and lack of abilities they are. And again, the fact of the matter is that no matter how much it seems to be a person responding to a certain set of situations, if we step back and have a broader look at this situation, we will discover that it's a set of needs and interests and concerns that respond to an apparent set of circumstances, and the response will come from the only abilities and lack of abilities that that apparent person is. And all of this is simply the movement of nature, the movement of existence. It's not a personal doing. It's simply the compulsive expression of existence. To think that somehow you've created yourself, to think that somehow you're totally responsible for your body and your brain, to think that you're totally responsible for how well or how efficiently or how inefficiently your body and your brain actually work to think that you're responsible for what your needs are or what your interests are or what your concerns are, to think that you've created your abilities or your lack of abilities, this really makes no sense in anybody's life or anybody's experience of life. All of this is simply the expression of, we could say it's nature, we could call it the universe, or if we really do acknowledge that nature and universe, the universe is simply one great compulsive flowing, a moving, shifting, dancing event that we don't create and we can't stop. It's a moving, shifting, dancing, happening that we don't make happen and we can't stop it from happening, then perhaps we don't have to call it the universe. We could simply call it a great mysterious happening, or we could use some of the expressions that have been used throughout history, the great spirit, God, Atman, the Tao. We could go to quantum physics and simply say it's a great mysterious process. To me, it doesn't really matter what we call it. But our common experience as human beings is that everything is moving and shifting and changing, and that we don't create ourselves. And therefore, we don't ultimately create anything else either. This person writes that, I heard that Ramana Maharshi said that we don't have free will, but we have to live as if we do. How do we do that? Well, I don't really know what Ramana Maharshi said, and the fact of the matter is that in our own experience, we don't have free will because once again, we don't create our bodies, we don't create our brains, we don't create how they function in this moment. We're not creating how the synaptic firing of the cells of our brain actually occurs. It's just happening. And it apparently gives rise to apparent thoughts and urges, and those urges may move on, push on to present actions. And all of this is simply the movement of nature, or the movement of neurology, or biology. Again, I don't really care what words we use to point to this event, but there is simply this happening that's happening, and we are just as much part of this happening of existence as anything else. So once again, we don't create our body and our brain, we don't create how those bodies and brains function. We don't give rise to our particular needs, interests, concerns, our particular arrangement of abilities, or our particular lack of abilities. All of this is simply a gift of nature or a gift of the great spirit, whatever you want to call it. And all of it is simply compulsively expressing itself in whatever way it's expressing itself right now, and whatever it seems to be is already moving on to something else. And yet, even though we don't have free will in any of this, it seems as though we do on a day-to-day basis. There is this focus on little descriptions of this great mysterious unformed event, and in those descriptions are presented stories of little forms that somehow influence other forms, when in fact no form ultimately exists. So, as Ramana Maharshi was pointing out, we don't have free will in this situation, but we have to live as if we do. So, we don't have free will in this situation, but it seems, in a lot of cases, that we do have free will. If apparent you has an interest in examining what's actually going on in this moment, it will become obvious that these apparent stories of particular forms influencing other forms, these particular stories, apparent stories of human beings moving themselves through life, those stories don't actually match our actual experience of life or our experience of this moment. Our apparent stories of existence will eventually declare themselves to be invalid, and what we're left with is the happening of this moment, compulsively expressing itself. All of it is a compulsive dance, a forceful expression. So, those are the only comments that have come up in response to this first letter. So we'll move on. A second person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. Again, I'd just like to express appreciation for your message and pointing. I really resonate with what is being expressed and feel quite a growing contentment with life as it comes. However, there still seems to be some uncomfortable or confusing distraction with what seem like stressful thoughts. I guess you could say the assumed personal mind stream. But I sense that what develops as this recognition of life being an inexplicable event occurs is a natural lessening of fascination with analytical or descriptive thought, the experiential confirmation that life is not capturable by description in any way must eventually express as an ever lessening of reliance on that assumed personal mind stream as any informancy of being. Is that your sense?" And yes, that is my sense of things here, that once it's acknowledged, or once this compulsive dance of the moment is acknowledged, this automatic streaming of everything, every apparent thing moving and shifting and dancing in this moment, sounds coming and going, seeing simply happening, vibration, pulsation, thoughts coming and going, moods coming and going, particular urges, a twinge here, a pain there, a shifting of the body, vibration, pulsation, warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, this automatic and totally inexplicable formless dance of this moment, always moving on to another apparent expression, once that's acknowledged, once there is some apparent interest in that event, it may or may not lead to less fascination with any thought at all. Now, it's very important to note that many people can acknowledge the mysterious dance of the moment. And how that plays out ultimately is different in each and every apparent person. In the same way that even though the movement of existence is ultimately a totally formless event, because we all will agree that everything is changing. So we have this flowing event of existence. And if everything is changing, each and everything is ultimately formless. Whatever it seems to be now is moving on to something else. Even though that's our common acknowledgement in life, it's also the case that within this apparent world of form, each and every form is unique. So I've said this many, many times before. Each and every snowflake, even though it's similar, each and every snowflake is actually unique. There are no two snowflakes that are identical. And so it is with all things in existence. We can't really find any two expressions that are identical. And this is also the case within this so-called non-dual realm, this non-dual sensibility. So all sorts of apparent people may acknowledge that existence is simply a compulsive formless dance, but each and every so-called person is a unique expression of this dance. And so it is that in some cases the apparent acknowledgement of this inexplicable event or inexplicable happening of the moment will very naturally lead to an apparent dropping of fascination or a dropping of interest in thought. So in some cases, some people may apparently move away from thought altogether. They may want to go off and live in a cave and not really indulge in the use of thought, or a focus on thought, I should say, within society. They simply withdraw from society, or they move into a life of silence. Whereas someone else may apparently be expressed as using thought in a more rigorous fashion, a more exact fashion, so that the focus may still be on thought, but there will also be, along with that, an acknowledgement that these thoughts are not any absolute reality. In my particular case, most of the time I'm not really particularly specifically interested in the realm of thought. And as I apparently grow older, there seems to be even less interest in it and more fascination with the dance of the moment itself. The fact that there's no way of knowing what it's going to present next. There's no way of knowing when it's going to present an incredibly strong focus on thought. Now, this same person sent in a follow-up note saying, "Hello again. I just wanted to follow up on my previous question to you and say that those uncomfortable or confusing distractions that I mentioned are now recognized as nothing other than that, too. The inexplicable eventing is also inescapable." So this person is pointing out that now she recognizes that those moments of stressful thoughts, which she thought were uncomfortable or confusing distractions, are now recognized as nothing other than the movement of this inexplicable happening as well. So she's saying the inexplicable eventing of this moment, the inexplicable happening of this moment, is also inescapable. And as she writes here, standing back or apart from it isn't possible. It never leaves behind any of or casts out any of its energy into an independent, simultaneous transpiring or eventing, even though descriptively they can appear that way. The same force of immediate fluxation is the onlyness to everything. Like an ever-refreshing fountain, nothing experienced in any way of portrayal is a separate life force. Even the transpiring of the fear thought of losing this recognition is an eventing of this. And then she asks, am I or is it answering its own questions, or am I way off track? And probably at this moment of my apparently responding to this question, she doesn't really even need me to respond to this question, because it just becomes more and more obvious that this is the case. What she's pointing out here is very much the simple acknowledgement that life is a totally mysterious event, and there isn't anything anywhere that isn't a compulsive expression of this totally mysterious event. So from this perspective, it doesn't matter if life apparently seems confused, or if fear seems to be arising, or if a mistake seems to occur, because in all cases, it's simply a totally mysterious event doing what it does. It's not a matter of confusion. It's not a matter of fear. It's not a matter of a mistake. It's always a totally inexplicable happening, formless, compulsive, moving, shifting, dancing, a never-ending parade of passing appearances, compulsively displaying themselves. Now, if we are apparently drawn to acknowledge this great mysterious dance of the moment, initially the focus is still very much on description and a relationship with form. But it may happen that as this event of the moment, the moving, shifting quality of everything, every apparent thing, is acknowledged more and more, the questions will eventually subside. Initially, the world of thought is still focused on very strongly, and it's, you know, the question comes, well, if this is truly a moving, shifting, dancing event, that must mean that I am not doing this. And, well, what about when I seem to do this and do that? And there is an attempt to incorporate or adjust, or there is an automatic adjustment of the realm of thought to this apparent perspective of life being one great mysterious dance. And there is an urge to somehow want to incorporate all of these descriptions into this perspective. But as apparent time passes, the realization grows that these descriptions themselves are really a fantasy, and we don't have to put so much effort, or we don't have to have so much of a focus on those fantasies. The descriptions will come and go when they're needed. A particular description of existence will present itself when it's needed. And when it's not needed, it's not necessary to put a great deal of focus on that description. What becomes more fascinating is the event itself, the fact that this description is dancing around all on its own. Our moods are dancing around all on their own. Our urges are dancing around all on their own. Those urges push themselves forward into actions all on their own, or they don't. All of this simply plays out in whatever way it plays out. So the observations presented in this person's note are very much in accordance with my own particular sense of things. However, once again, we can never be exactly the same in this. We can never be an identical expression to anyone else's expression. Each and every one of us is unique in some way, no matter how many apparent similarities seem to arise. Within this non-dual perspective, eventually there's just a total trust in this inexplicable dancing of the moment, the fact that we're being danced, the fact that we are simply the compulsive expression of an inexplicable, forceful, moving, shifting, formless force of some kind. There's no way of saying anything about it, really. But there comes more and more a sense of resting as that dance. It's all on automatic. We don't have to be concerned as to how it's going to express itself, because there is only this mysterious happening expressing itself. There never has been anything else ever evident. The trust in that comes from the simple acknowledgement that there is only that. And the rest, the sense of resting in this, arises when it's realized it's all on automatic. A third person has written in saying, "Hi Daryl, I've been wondering about the nature of reality for about 45 years now, and although I mostly grasp its ungraspability, the mind still plays the game, and lately I've been reading and listening to your material. I think my question is pretty much semantic, but please give it a shot. Your jumping-off point is the central fact of change, which is undeniable. Yet you then use that as a means of declaring objects to be illusory. I certainly agree that what we perceive is not necessarily what's actually occurring, but for me the fact of change does not negate the existence of objects. For me, there are apparent objects that have as their main characteristic the fact of change. They do not remain in any particular state from moment to moment. In fact, to some extent, the characteristics and rate of change even seem predictable. I'm curious how you would address this view and either deny it or incorporate it into your presentation. I guess my apparent mind enjoys trying to shoot holes in Advaitic theory. What a drag." Basically, I'm in agreement with what this person is saying. Change is undeniable. We all agree that everything is changing. But then he says, you use that as a means of declaring objects to be illusory. Well, what I declare to be illusory is form. So the event of existence is happening. And I'm simply saying what this person is saying, that there are apparent objects that have as their main characteristic the fact of change. So if a thing presents itself as endlessly changing, then it can't be a particular thing. It can't have a particular shape, but apparent shapes are still obviously presenting themselves. So what I'm declaring to be illusory is what life seems to be. I'm not saying that life itself isn't happening. I'm not saying that there isn't an event of this moment that isn't playing itself out. For me, there is a happening, the happening of this moment. I'm not going to deny that something is happening now. We all have the sense that something is happening right now. There's just the happening of this moment, and there are apparent forms presenting themselves. And these apparent forms present what we could call a basic fact that they're all changing. And so we're left with this situation where life appears to be forms, and yet our basic sense of existence is that it has no form. Actually, as I consider the question in this note, I'm sort of wondering why there's a question here at all, because it seems to be pretty much in alignment with everything that I generally say, that there are apparent objects. They have as their main characteristic the fact of change, so they can't actually be a particular form. And as this person says, what we perceive is not necessarily what's occurring. I'm in agreement with all of that. He ends this note with the statement, "I guess my apparent mind enjoys trying to shoot holes in Advaitic theory." Well, actually, I don't present Advaitic theory I really don't have any real interest in Advaita or Buddhism or Christianity or any of it. This is simply an acknowledgement of everyday experience. It's a very straightforward and simple acknowledgement of what we all apparently agree is our experience. And it's nothing more than that. If it happens to sound like Advaitic theory or Buddhist theory or Christian theory, that's fine. But what's being noted here is our common experience. We commonly say that everything is changing. We commonly acknowledge that we don't create our body and brain. We don't create our basic needs, interests, concerns. We don't create our abilities, our talents, or our lack of abilities, our lack of talents. All of this is simply the movement of existence, the movement of nature, the movement of this event, of this moment. We don't have to call it anything. Just the happening of this moment, moving and shifting and dancing in the way that it does. All right, another person has written in saying, "Hello, I've really enjoyed listening to everything you have recorded and released to the public. I relate to your message completely. What I like most of all is the methodical and unswerving delivery. My question is unfair, and so I do not expect an answer. I probably fit the category of sending you a message of support and not a question to be answered in your talks. My question is, what do you think of the book I've attached to this email, especially pages 1 to 16? Thanks. Keep up the great work. I hope you will still record something monthly, even if no questions are sent in. The danger of such a clear message is that your audience will soon be left with no questions. They'll still love to listen, though. Thank you." Okay. thanks for the message of support. And I really don't have the time or the energy to read books that people send in. I took a cursory glance at the pages that this person has sent in, and without going into anything in great detail, because I didn't read it in great detail, it basically seems to be very similar to general Taoist descriptions. Initially, there's a section describing the man of the Tao and giving details of what an awakened being will be like, how that apparent person will behave. And, when I read that stuff, I think, why do they bother? Why do they bother describing how a so-called awakened being is going to behave? It's absurd. Each and every expression of existence is unique. And each and every apparent enlightened being that I've ever run across had their own particular personality. They had their own particular foibles, apparent frailties, their own peculiar little quirks. And a lot of them weren't pleasant. They weren't necessarily pleasant human beings. So the whole notion of how an enlightened being is supposed to behave is really, it's not quite accurate. There are certain general similarities, certain general apparent qualities that arise with a non-dual perspective, but they're never exactly the same in any two instances. And outside of this description of a man of the Tao, these pages seem to, they seem to be talking basically about what any number of non-dual pointings talk about, although they seem more poetic than specific, and I'm not really drawn to a lot of poetry within this. Seems that for thousands of apparent years, people have been incredibly poetic about this without ever actually getting the message across. So, again, thank you for the message of support. But again, I don't really have the time or the energy to examine any treatises that are sent in. The next person has written in saying, "Hello, my first language is not English, so if you do not understand some point, please ask. I have read your book, Dismantling the Fantasy, and listened to the interview from Conscious TV about 100 times or more. It is so fresh, and I won't say more. I know that I haven't done anything, but nobody believes me. So is it okay if other people do not support the formless life in words, and I just live as life presents itself for me? This is a strange experience, but today a friend said that life is explained for her somehow, even if it is not explicable for someone else. I know that she has a right, because even the explaining is not something that she does. It's just happening the way it's happening. So there's no difference between automatic explaining in life and the inexplicable formless happening of life. There is nobody who can do any choosing or has free will to do something. I cannot do something because there is no separate me or separate one or one that's separate from anything. Everything is happening naturally, automatically. I just share my day experience for you, and you know it has no meaning. So I drove my car and was singing something, and for a moment, there was no understanding of what I'm doing and what I'm singing. Suddenly, I noticed that it is coming from nothing or formlessness. For a moment, I realized that here there is no my body or body or form, and here there is no my song or my doing or any explanation. A moment after that came the question, what am I singing, what am I doing, and what is happening here? And that was fun. For a moment, everything was happening by itself and has no explanation. Like everything is happening now itself. Like everything is happening right now, and that is complete. Next time, I remember that if I can look back, not turn back the body, but if I can look back, there is nothing, or there is a source, or there is that inexplicable formlessness, and somehow this formlessness or happening is like really needing to be defined, almost like an emergency. And there is automatically happening the question, what is this? And automatically happening the answer, this is me. And the next question arises, what is me? And then arises the feeling or knowing, I am this physical body. So then I realize what you're pointing to when you say that sound has no meaning. Thank you. Anyway, whether or not this person's language, first language, is English, he's expressing very clearly his sense that everything is simply a great inexplicable happening, and that even the explanations that we have are a great inexplicable happening. So that even with this sense that life is simply presenting itself, there will be moments when there is, as he puts it, almost a sense of emergency in wanting a definition, and that there will be an automatic arising of the question, what is this? And automatically there will be some thought that comes along in an attempt to respond to this question. And all of that is this totally inexplicable event. So, hopefully I'm getting what this person was wanting to express in this note. When he's saying that ultimately none of this event has any particular meaning. It's just a totally inexplicable happening, and that includes all of those really meaningful explanations. They come and go all on their own, a totally mysterious event, and that it's quite fine for someone else to feel as though they understand existence, because that's also part of this totally inexplicable event, that certain apparent people are expressed in this way. And in the very beginning of this note, he says, I know I haven't done anything, but nobody believes me. So is it okay if other people do not support this this sense of life being formless? And I just live as it's presented for me. And yes, it's totally fine. Not only is it fine, that's the way it's going to be presented. That's the way it will apparently seem to be. Because apparently, this non-dual sense of things is not for everyone. The way this totally mysterious happening of existence presents itself, it presents itself in a way that it seems as though only a certain percentage of apparent human beings will have an interest in this non-dual perspective. And that's totally fine, because every expression of this great mysterious event is legitimate. There isn't anyone going the wrong direction. There is simply, always, a totally inexplicable happening expressing itself. Okay, moving on to the next one. Dear Daryl, I am curious about how the perspective you offer fits in with the teachings of the Buddha as they are commonly taught, especially given your apparent history as a Buddhist monk. I have been following a traditional Theravada Buddhist path for many years, but have recently been drawn towards a non-dual perspective. The Buddhist teachings emphasize the importance of understanding ignorance, karma, suffering, dependent origination, etc., and that the understanding of these will lead to an event called liberation. It seems to me that these concepts are superimpositions of thought onto the happening of the moment. If ignorance, karma, suffering, etc. are merely illusions, I wonder why they occupy so much space in the Buddha's teachings. Take karma, for example. How can one thing be said to give rise to another thing when there are ultimately no things? There is only the formless happening of the moment as it is presented. How can a person be said to reap the rewards of so-called wholesome actions when the person itself is an illusion? In the playing out of one's so-called spiritual journey, could it be that these are concepts that resonate with a person's level of understanding until such time as they can be seen to be illusory superimpositions onto reality? I am very appreciative of your sharings and your willingness to answer questions. Warm regards. So let's go through this, these points individually. The note opens up saying, I'm curious about how the perspective you offer fits in with the teachings of the Buddha as they are commonly taught, especially given your apparent history as a Buddhist monk. Well, okay, from my apparent experience as a Buddhist monk, and that is basically 6 years in Theravada monasteries in a meditation tradition, Buddhism, like many other great spiritual teachings, is a mishmash of teachings, a mixture of teachings. So it's not, even though many of these great spiritual traditions will say that they're ultimately a non-dual teaching, they actually are a mixture of non-dual teachings and dualistic teachings, so that you have what you might call a very basic psychological teaching offered with various practices, various explorations that you can participate in if you're drawn to, if you're compelled to move in life in that way. So you have these psychological teachings, and within this broad presentation, which is generally a psychological presentation, you will find what would be called a non-dual teaching as well. So it doesn't really matter whether it's Buddhism or Christianity or various forms of Hinduism, Taoism, and all the rest. Any of the ones that will say they are ultimately a non-dual teaching, in general, they're a mixture of dualistic and non-dual perspectives. And for those who are drawn to those traditions, they will say that the dualistic teachings are really offering a much broader teaching than the non-dual perspective, so that a non-dual perspective, they will say, can only be understood by a few individuals, a few apparent individuals, and so all these other teachings, the dualistic teachings, that speak of a self moving towards a certain goal, teachings of ignorance, karma, suffering, all of that. This is for a much broader group of people to relate to. And they would generally say what this person is saying, that those teachings will be related to by people with a particular understanding until such time that somebody realizes the non-dual perspective. So the main question here is, how does the perspective that I offer fit in with the teachings of the Buddha as they are commonly taught? That's a good question. What I'm pointing to is simply the event of existence which gives rise to the apparent functioning of traditions like Buddhism or Christianity or Hinduism or Taoism or science, philosophy, whatever. I'm simply pointing to the event that expresses all of these apparent forms and their differences. So in a way, it doesn't really fit in to those teachings. Within my apparent storylines, it seems as though the vast majority of spiritual teachings that claim to be non-dual teachings, they really are, for the most part, a dualistic teaching, and they have small portions that point to a non-dual sensibility. In the case of Buddhism, you have these various forms of Buddhism, so that Theravada Buddhism seems, in general, to put an emphasis on dualistic and psychological teachings, and in certain rare moments the teaching points very specifically to a non-dual perspective, and the discrepancies show up very obviously, just as this person has pointed out. Take karma, for example. How can one thing be said to give rise to another thing when there are ultimately no things? there is only the formless happening of the moment as it is presented. And how can a person be said to reap the rewards of so-called wholesome actions when the person itself is an illusion? And yes, these discrepancies are very obvious with something like Buddhism and certain types of Buddhism, which point to the fact that everything is changing, so everything is a formless happening, and it points to the fact that there is no self. I mean, this is one of the basic tenets of Buddhist teaching. There is no self apart from the happening of existence. And if we go into the Theravada scriptures, we will eventually run across the teaching of the Buddha that says there is only the unformed, and meaning basically the unformed happening or eventing of this moment. And one who realizes that no longer assesses life in terms of physical forms, feelings, perceptions, mental activities, or states of consciousness. Because these descriptions ultimately do not apply to what's happening here. And in other moments, the Buddha said, feelings, thoughts, and perceptions still arise and pass. But someone who is awakened is no longer really all that interested in those, because descriptions of existence do not apply. What is the unformed. So basically, as I would read that, it's the unformed dance of existence. And from my apparent perspective, since 99% of the spiritual teachings out in the world are ultimately pointing to some dualistic teaching, and only a very small percentage of any of the traditions are really pointing directly to this non-dual sensibility, I'm quite happy to just emphasize the non-dual sensibility if pretty much every other apparent teaching is still pointing very strongly to a dualistic approach to life. That's fine. Obviously, the field is already covered. So my compulsion is to consistently point to this non-dual event of existence, just the totally mysterious happening of this moment. And let's see, last but not least, we have somebody who's written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. A lot of non-duality authors and speakers talk about unconditional love. I noticed you don't seem to speak much of love, but more about an openness. There are some people that say that there is only love, or everything is unconditional love. Does unconditional love and concepts such as everything is love form part of the expression that you talk about? Part of me feels it doesn't need to be called anything, but another part wonders and sometimes yearns to see this unconditional love that is everything. Your help on this would be appreciated. Thank you." Okay, unconditional love. Well, internationally and philosophically, the highest form of love is not the kind of attached love that we usually talk about. Human beings, when they generally talk about love, they're pointing to this feeling of affection or warmth for a particular person or a particular activity or a particular song. It's a kind of emotional form that's being pointed to in that. However, philosophically, internationally, the highest sense of love or the highest definition of love is not this kind of overwhelming sense of warmth towards a person or an activity or something that you would say that you love. It's not a kind of emotional attachment to anything in particular. Unconditional love is an incredible sense of receiving, an open receiving, or an openness to all that existence is presenting. And it's true that within these non-dual teachings in general, there are those who express that sense of openness as unconditional love, or they will say that everything is love. And, you know, someone like Robert Adams, there was a point in his life when he would simply be teaching very simply and would be saying things like, "You are not the body, you are not the mind, there is only love." But the love that he was referencing here is that openness to all that life is expressing. Now, this openness arises with the fact that everything is a legitimate expression of existence. And this openness is not necessarily a situation of us wandering around saying, "I love the flowers, I love the birds, I love the trees, I love the mass murderers, I love the wars, I love the famine, I love the disease. Life is just so wonderful." It's not necessarily that expression, although, as I've pointed out time and time again, each and every apparent non-dual sensibility is unique. So we have certain apparent individuals that will be expressing themselves in this way. But it's also the case that unconditional love can simply be the unconditional acknowledgement that everything in existence is valid. Everything in existence is legitimate. Everything in existence has a right to be existing the way it exists. And so it is, there is an unconditional receiving of all people and all of their expressions. It doesn't necessarily mean that you like their expression. So it's, you know, as Woody Allen said, the lamb shall lie down with the lion, but he won't get much sleep. And so it is with anyone that has a non-dual sense of existence, that there is an acknowledgement that all of the expressions of existence are legitimate expressions of existence. They're all valid. There is an openness to all of their expressions, because it makes no sense to try to resist their expression intellectually or emotionally. If they're dangerous, it makes sense to physically avoid their expression or physically restrain their expression. But there doesn't have to be any kind of moral judgment of any human being or any expression. There is no moral quality to any of this. There is only a totally mysterious expression expressing itself. The totally mysterious dance of existence expressing itself. So in the same way that nature presents certain creatures that are poisonous or aggressive in their behavior, we don't have to morally judge them. We don't have to say that they're not, we don't have to say that they're somehow a mistake in existence. They're not. They're a totally legitimate expression of existence. But in their expression, there are certain things we may have to watch out for. It's also the case that in all of the expressions of existence, there is the impression that certain expressions are not as pleasant as others. And it becomes very obvious that the lives of certain apparent human beings are not as fortunate as the lives of others. And there seems to be a natural compassion that arises within this situation. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean that someone who has this natural compassion is going to rush out and try to save the world, try to correct all of what seems to be the unfair situations in life. But there is a heartfelt feeling for all of the expressions of existence, in the realization that no one is choosing to be expressed the way they're expressed. And certain expressions seem to be incredibly difficult or troubled. And there is a natural compassion for the fact that no one chooses to be expressed the way they're expressed. However, once again, each and every apparent non-dual sensibility is unique, and so you have certain expressions, certain apparent expressions, such as Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa basically felt that everything was God's doing, that each and every human being is placed where they're placed by God, by the force of God. Everyone is an expression of God. And whatever they do in life, they serve God by doing that. So in the case of Mother Teresa, I remember actually an interview that was being done with Mother Teresa where reporters asked her, what's it like to be a saint? And she said, my life is no different from yours. I am placed where I'm placed in the same way that you're placed where you're placed. This was her response to these reporters. So just as an apparent expression like Mother Teresa is compelled to go into the most difficult situations, social situations in the world, to find the poorest of the poor, and not attempt to change that poverty, but simply love the ones who are not getting loved. That was what she was compelled to do. That's a legitimate expression of existence, and it's a legitimate expression of a non-dual sensibility. But it's also the case that someone like U.G. Krishnamurti, who would often seem very aggravated by people coming to him to ask questions about life, he would simply say, why do you come here asking me these questions? Like, I don't go anywhere to ask anybody any questions. Just, I can't help you. And if I can't help you, no one can help you. So go home and live your life. Now, on the surface, that doesn't seem very compassionate. But actually, he was, in his own way, compelled to simply point out to people that each of us is a unique expression. We are compelled to be what we are. Life is a compulsive, compulsory, compelled event. It is simply the force of compulsion expressing itself. It is a formless compulsion, ever compelled to push itself forward in the way that it does. And each of us is a portion of that compelled dance, that compelled expression. U.G. Krishnamurti had that sense of existence and was simply trying to cut through all other approaches and simply point out that each of us has to be whatever we are. So go home and live your life. There's no need to be asking questions. Now, that wouldn't be my way of expressing it, but I'm simply a different compulsion. I would point out that even the need to ask questions is part of the compulsory dance. So the acknowledgement of this compulsory event of the moment, the inexplicable happening of this moment, pushing itself forward, expressing itself the way it expresses itself, that naturally gives rise to an openness to the entire event, because there is only the event. There is only the event presenting itself. So however it presents itself is fine. Any apparent individual with this apparent sensibility will have this sense of openness to the event to a greater or lesser degree. Again, each is apparently unique. And in that openness, there is a natural compassion for those apparent beings that are expressed in what seems to be a much more troubled fashion or a much more difficult situation, because there is the understanding that they did not choose to be that. And in that, there may also arise a sense of warmth for all the expressions, a sense of brotherhood or sisterhood, a sense of fascination with all the expressions, a sense of acknowledgement of all the expressions, a sense of the legitimacy, the validity of all expressions. There may be a sense of wonder, a sense of appreciation at the range of expression, the uniqueness of each and every expression, so that even for the ones that don't seem to be particularly pleasant, there is a fascination with their exotic quality, their uniqueness, in the same way that we may not want to rush up and hug some kind of giant beetle that we might find in a South American rainforest. But there's a fascination and an appreciation and a kind of love for the exotic expression that that beetle is. That may also apply to even the most difficult human being. Even the most dangerous human being. The fact of the matter is, they are also a valid and legitimate expression of existence, and they are incredibly exotic in their unique appearance. So, just to bring to a close this question regarding love, I'll read a portion from one of my books, Dismantling the Fantasy, pertaining to this aspect of love. So this piece goes, "There is only a mysterious happening that can't be understood in any way. It becomes obvious there has never been anything else. This is a complete opening to the unformed, the undirected, the uncontrolled, the unexpected, and the unpredictable. This openness is often called love. In this, you are not a body, you are not a mind. There is only love. This love is not some cold intellectual understanding, it's an openness of heart. This love is not an aching, desire-filled attachment to a person, a possession, an idea, a cause, a career, a practice, or an understanding. This love is not some romantic myth of everyone embracing and singing the same song. Instead, it's a truly sensitive vulnerability to what is. Ideas only go so far. At some point, the heart may open to the totally indefinable, unpredictable, and often unwanted movement that life is. Love is that openness of heart." And with that, we come to the end of the questions that were sent in for the month of November. As always, whatever I've presented here is simply for your consideration. It's to be compared to your own experience. It's supposed to be related to your own experience. And what rings true, rings true. I'm not asking that anybody approach life in the way that I approach it. I'm simply putting forward a certain perspective. If that rings true in relation to your apparent experience, then you take from it whatever you'll take from it. The bottom line in this perspective is an incredibly simple sensibility. Right now, there's just the happening of this moment. And that happening includes the happening that we call me. There is what we call seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, and thinking, the mental activities. It's not just thinking. If we step back from this tight focus on the world of thought, the storylines, and there is a simple acknowledgement of the larger event of this moment, the happening that we call seeing, the happening that we call hearing, the happening that we call touching, tasting, smelling, and the happening that we call thinking or mental activities. We don't have to call it anything. In this moment, even if we do nothing, if we sit and do absolutely nothing, this whole happening continues to present itself. We don't have to call it anything. We don't have to understand it as anything. It's a compulsive dance. The event of this moment is a compulsive expression, moving, shifting, flowing. Breath coming and going, heart beating, vibration, pulsation, warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening. Just this event, this happening. Do you have the impression that you're making this moment happen? Do you have the impression that you're making the process that you are happen, or is it just happening? We all at some point will eventually say that everything is changing. Do we understand what we're saying when we say that? Do we understand that we're acknowledging that we're not making the change happen? Do we understand that we're acknowledging that we can't stop that changing? There is only this rolling on, this flowing, this streaming, and it's there in all apparent things. The next thought that's arising, the thought that's arising in this moment, it's that flowing, the mood that's arising in this moment or presenting itself in this moment, it's that flowing. The twinge, the pain, the shift, the focus, the present focus of attention, which is now moving on to something else. All of this is this flowing, streaming, dancing event, the Great Spirit, the river of life, the unformed ocean of existence, God, Atman. This happening is all that actually is. There's no way to say what it is. And there's no way to deny the sense that something is happening in this moment. Obviously, we all have the sense that something is happening in this moment. There's no way to say what it is, because whatever it seems to be now is moving on to some other appearance. Is it light? Well, wait a while, it'll be dark. Is it warm? Well, wait a while, it'll be cold. Does it feel happy? Well, wait a while, it'll seem to be sad. Does it seem to be clear? Well, wait a while, it'll seem to be confused. And so on, always moving and shifting, moving on to some other appearance. This is a very simple acknowledgement. There is only this happening, simply happening. Now, it would be my wish that this happening always be pleasant for you. But the fact of the matter is, it won't always be pleasant for you. It simply is what it is in any particular moment. And in this moment, this expression is fading away. So till next time, see ya.